This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we have an amazing guest. Max Rempel is with us, and we're going to be talking about telepathy and hybridization in an entirely new way. You can find out more about Max's work at his website, xgrxg1.org. That's it, xg1.org. Max is making it very clear. Can you tell us a little of your own background, Max? Because I think that you will find that Max's understanding of this is perhaps the deepest in the world. I've never come across anyone who had such a deep understanding of this subject.
Thank you very much. I did a few interviews so far, and we stayed so long on my background, we never got to, we had very little time to get to the actual subject. So I will try to shorten it. So I have two parallel or three parallel tracks. One is mainstream and one is alternative science. And mainstream, I worked 30 years in mainstream. I don't think it's my achievement. It's more like I was just pushed by my spirit guides and whoever controls my destiny to the labs. And I was a middle author in very authoritative papers. One of them is the discovery of schizophrenia gene. I did a lot of genotyping there. I had a robot and helped technicians to do that. And another one was on longevity, and another one on gene regulation, like looking very close up at gene promoters, at pieces of DNA in there. So my main focus in mainstream is DNA structure, gene regulation, and the work of the genome. And I worked in, so I'm a Jew from Moscow, graduated from Moscow State University, the chemical department, main university, did DNA synthesis there for thesis. Worked in the Institute of Molecular Biology, the main molecular biology institution, second molecular biology institution in Russia, and I did genetic engineering there in 86 to 89, Moscow Institute of Gene Biology, developed DNA extractor, DNA sequencer there, 89 to 94, moved to America in 90, got PhD in 94 in DNA extraction and sequencing. Moved to America in 96, did my schizophrenia work in Virginia Commonwealth University, worked in National Cancer Institute. And by the way, I was a couple times I was in that facility in Fort Frederick working with mice. Nothing secret, just boring mouse work. And then did Rochester, University of Rochester, and worked in a few industry companies. So that's about my mainstream. So 30 years of that, and my publication rank, I'm in the 90th percentile. Basically, I'm within 10% of best published scientists, but not within 5%, somewhere around 10%. So mediocre high level.
So my mediocre high level, that's a funny phrase.
I mean, nobody knows me, like, really. My bosses, they know my bosses. Yeah, my bosses are pretty well known. I was just middle author in the paper. Nothing of my own in mainstream science. I don't think so.
Well, let me ask you this. Your background being Russian and your education there, do you think Russia is, are there any institutes or individuals in Russia who are pursuing serious inquiries into things like telepathy?
Let me see. Yes. Traditionally, Russian science was pretty well invested in paranormal research and telepathy. And I know the names of Pavlov and Durov are, if you just Google names, Pavlov and Durov, they are respected in the West, and they established modern animal experimentation. And on a side note, Pavlov certainly experimented with telepathy in dogs, between human and dog. So that was known in 20s and 30s. They did experiments for sure. More recently, I think they continue to do a lot of extrasensory perception research, but this is all hidden, so I don't know the names of institution. There is a lot of leaks in Russia. The leaks are plenty. It's much more than here. In America, it's all much more structured. In Russia, because of the political upheavals or just plain mess in Russia, there is a leakage of information. So there is a lot of extra sensory perception works. Yes, I don't know the name though, but there is a lot of speakers on YouTube who speak about that, and the culture is to respect that direction of research.
And Max has, by the way, folks, a remarkable 20-minute video on YouTube that we will be linking to on the show. And it's really, really worth watching. We're going to be working this interview pretty much off of the video, which is f more informative about telepathy than really anything I've ever seen. The reason being that it has a lot of practical ideas about why it works. And this is so important to the Western mind, to our minds, even though we say, well, maybe I'm not in the scientific mainstream, we remain passive until we have some kind of a rationale about things. And we need to get telepathy working as a species, or we're not going to make it here. This
Yes,
is
absolutely.
absolutely. And so let's start with DNA and why DNA would be the perfect mediator between the quantum world and the classical world. Because, wait, just let me finish. Because, folks, this point of mediation between the quantum and classical worlds is of absolutely critical importance. We must be able to Must learn how to enable our consciousness to engage in the quantum level in order to do this. So can you tell us this, answer this question first, why DNA has to be at the core of this?
Right. So the DNA is a chemical substance. It's a polymer. Our chromosomes in every cell are made of DNA. And our body contains 250 grams of DNA. It's a substantial amount. And you can buy it, actually. You can buy human DNA isolated from disposed placenta. And it's pretty inexpensive. So, and it's fluffy, so it will take the whole bucket of that DNA from a human body. So it's a very strong substance. You could make a fabric out of that. The only problem is that it dissolves in water, so it would dissolve in your sweat. But it's pretty strong polymer. You cannot break it. Anyway, so the size of DNA is the chromosome is an average chromosome is 20 centimeters, that size alone. It's like one strand, and the thickness is 2 nanometers, and it's very tiny. Basically, it's about 10 15 atoms wide, 10 15 atoms wide. So on that level, the quantum mechanical world is fully present. Quantum mechanical laws, quantum physics, which are quantum entanglement, wave particle duality, an uncertainty principle, meaning you can't really localize where the atom is. It's probability field, interference, all the wave properties of the waves, like interference and refraction, and bilocation. So the DNA on the level of single DNA letters called nucleotides A, G, C, T is a wave, a field, and it is a subject of quantum laws. But on the length of the size of the chromosome, it becomes already a macro object. So that's a perfect door, perfect gateway, the portal between the macro world of us and the micro world of quantum laws. So that's the main premise of claiming that DNA is the key to all psychic abilities and telepathy and all, yeah, all quantum and all strangeness in the macro world. Should I continue?
We're going to take a brief break here.
Sure.
We'll be right back with Max in just a moment. We're talking to Max Rempel. Max is an expert on the significance of DNA in telepathy, and we're going to be talking later about hybridization. Max's very well-developed ideas about why humanity is a hybridized species. Max, one of the things about what we're talking about is that water is a very important part of it. The DNA is floated in basically in water. Is that correct?
Yes. So initially my alternative research started 99, now it's 26 years. I visited Russia for after a big break, and I was given a book by a distant friend. I never spoke to her before or after, but she gave me the book, which was called The Wave Genome, which is the same thing as DNA resonance or quantum genetics by Garaev. So I absorbed the main idea, and since then, it became the main interest of mine. So I work on that. Initially, it was a transition period for maybe 10 years. And last 10 years, I work primarily on that. It's like 90% of my work is on that. So DNA resonance. And initially, I was, as a chemist, I know that the core of DNA is hydrophobic. It repels water. It repels water. It's pretty oily, so it's called the base stack. And initially, I was thinking about that base stack is a wire which contains delocalized electrons, which is well known, and which is likely superconductive, which is partly known. If you just Google superconductance in DNA and conductance in DNA, it's called charge transfer, but you will find that it's pretty well studied for the last 20 years. So I was looking only at that. And I discovered there that the delocalized electrons that depend on the sequence of DNA, and also delocalized proton depend on the sequence of DNA. So electromagnetic properties of these oscillators would be dependent on the sequence. But then when we started doing the modeling, we realized that electrons are insulated, but protons are bound to the water. So the DNA stack exchanges protons with the water. So these wires go outside in the water. So I was faced with the necessity to study the water structure. I looked at all possible information. I was attracted by ideas of Gerald Pollack that the water is has special structure around charged surfaces and DNA is highly negatively charged. And I looked at Pollack's molecular structure, and I didn't like it because it is chemically impossible. It's almost possible, but there is a problem there. And then I noticed in Pollack's answering to the questions on YouTube, he mentioned that the structure of macromolecules would imprint on water by shifting the layers. I developed that idea, and Pollack doesn't remember it anymore. He just answered, and he doesn't remember. So anyway, I found polywater published by Lippincott in 69, which is chemically possible. It's an interesting structure, and I formulated the idea. I called it pin tumbler lock model, pin tumbler model, where DNA sequence shifts water layers around it by stepwise. And so DNA is vertical, and perpendicular water layers are shifted relative to each other because of the DNA sequence. So this way, DNA sequence can imprint on water. And this explains the ideas of Luc Montagnier that DNA can imprint its sequence on water and reverse. Basically, if you use that water for PCR, then the DNA is restored and sequence is restored in that water. So I'm not sure his experiments are not well described, but the idea was very profound that the DNA structures the water around it. I predicts that, I mean, it's logical that two identical sequences bound by the layers of water will form a more stable structure. And more stable structure in the chromosome would probably help folding chromosome like magnetic ties, fasteners, like magnetic fasteners. So, and I was looking for the function of repetitive sequences in the genome since 99, because the resonance should be primarily be done by repetitive sequences. And we have lots of repetitive sequences in genome. It's 55% of the genome is repetitive. So,
But
and the main, go ahead.
Max, can you roll back a minute? What do you mean by resonance here?
Yeah. Resonance in classical sense is what we use in radios and smartphones, where the phone has to tune into the wavelength and then resonate. So the sender, the tower, sends a certain wavelength, and the cell phone resonates with it, captures the signal, and amplifies it using a battery. So that's if you tune in into the same wave, you resonate, you amplify the signal.
Now, in telepathy, we're not talking about a known form of signal, an electromagnetic signal, or any known form of signal. But what you're saying here is the signal that we cannot yet detect operates according to the same principles as signals we can detect. Would that be correct or no?
I claim pretty confidently that the body operates on resonance, and this resonance happens on acoustic waves, electromagnetic waves, and etheric waves, which are also called subtle or scalar waves. So this kind of non-physical ways they cannot be detected by our devices, but they can be detected by biological objects. So yes, I think a huge layer of coordination in the body is happening on the resonance level. And this idea is well developed by other researchers of biofield, including Sheldrake, who postulated the morphic field. And also, we, the researchers of the biofield, we agree that it's not only the biology which is based on resonance, but also consciousness, individual consciousness. We resonate with a certain field which is outside of the body.
Now, you postulate essentially two levels of mind, one which you call the physical mind, which is the mind we're working in right now, which is in time and space, and then an intuitive mind, which is timeless. Now, you say in telepathy, classic brainwave oscillations, which are physical mind thinking, are converted to DNA oscillations. Because DNA is part of the unified oscillating network of the body. Now, here's my question. If we are to do telepathy, we have to have some way of effecting the transfer of classical brainwave oscillations into DNA oscillations. How it, and now that is a it strikes me as a perhaps a form of meditation or something. And you say some things in your video very specific about this. How do we do this? Because it is doable. It's definitely doable. I've seen people doing it. I've seen people sitting face to face, or back to back, engaged in complex telepathy easily. I've seen it. It's real.
All right. Let's first formulate, before I get carried away, let's formulate two ideas. First is that DNA oscillations of the neurons are linked with the brainwave oscillations of the neurons. So brainwave oscillations go in axons as an action potential movement, and DNA oscillations happen in the nuclei of the neurons, and there is a vibrational coupling of the two. That's the first idea. I can develop it further. So DNA, I believe, is involved in the brain and the brain function normally. It's not something unusual. It's not that you only during telepathy do that. And the second idea is that the brain anatomy is also participating. Okay, so these are two ideas. And then Diane Hennessy in her book ESP Perception, ESP Enigma, Extrasensory Perception Enigma, she makes a very confident, strong argument that the brain anatomy is key to telepathy, that we have some sort of brain structures that inhibit telepathy. And I also think that inhibition of telepathy happens through brain structure and culture, because tribes which are outside of the culture, non-speaking autists which are outside of the culture, and children which haven't been brainwashed yet, they're all telepathic. Many of them are telepathic. There is beautiful examples where people, hunters of the tribe, go away and communicate telepathically with the base, and if they're needed back, they've been telepathically called back, and they basically know the news of each other. And we know telepathy in dogs and cats and children, but there is something in our culture which blocks it. We probably are telepathic in a dream, and Carl Jung, already studied telepathy in dreams, and it was proven over 100 years ago that there is telepathy in dreams. But when we go in awakened state, the telepathy is blocked. So the telepathy is unblocked in normal neurotypical people sometimes, and it happens through meditation, and autistic non-speaking telepaths, they can teach their teachers telepathy, and the teachers now receive the questions telepathically, answer them, or sometimes they conduct the lesson in silence. So I think that Dan Hennessy makes a good argument that two hemispheres have to be oscillating in coordination, sure, should be oscillating in coordination. And also, I think there is basically the culture fragments the brain. The culture fragments the brain through trauma, and a requirement. First, there is a requirement for precision. There is a requirement for the ego. So the person has to be responsible and being individualistic, basically egotistic, and focus on their own interest. And then there is a time pressure, and there is a precision pressure, time pressure, fear, and disconnect from others. And the meditation, what it does, it dissolves all of that. It dissolves the ego. You become one with others, especially with your telepathic pair. That is essential. You become intuitive, unfocused, and you become timeless. And I think that happens on the level of the brain, on the level of neurons, and it happens on the level of DNA. The DNA vibration, I think, also changes. And I published a paper a while ago, like 10 years ago, suggesting that there are two states of molecules in the brains. In one state, they are fixed, like wave-particle duality, they are become particle. In another state, they become delocalized. Electrons and protons become delocalized and become a wave. So our culture presses us into DNA becoming particles, chemicals, solid, while meditation moves the DNA into intuitive state, delocalized state, where it becomes a wave. One more important addition. I noticed also that the information flow is pushing us into that state of oversaturation of senses. And I think the key to telepathy is also to reverse the flow from outside in to inside out.
So you would say then that the technological world we live in, which is drawing us more and more into, we're drawn into our cell phones, we're drawn into our computers, we're drawn into this, that, the other thing, and so much information is flowing in that we're kind of overwhelmed. Would that be a right way to put it?
Saturated, overwhelmed.
So we have to reduce that information flow in order to.
Be very specific about what we take in. And possibly disconnect from other people who are dragging us down in vibration. You have to be high. You have to be high and pure. High and pure. Like telepathy is given to kind and pure people. If you are fragmented and angry, then it's blocked.
That word kind really resonates with me because I've been with some of the spellers, and the feeling of kindness between them and the love between them and their teachers is very palpable. When you get in the room, you're in a different world. You're in a world that it's so beautiful that you think to yourself, why isn't this my world? And it can be because you can take that kindness with you. And yet we don't. We're always so angry about everything, and the news is there to make us even angrier. And it seems like the whole world is devoted to silencing our ability to really communicate with each other, because the little bit of telepathy I've had has told me this is the real way that we're supposed to communicate, not with this, but with this. And
Maybe you should show the heart.
in the heart. Have you ever had telepathic experiences?
I was in math school, mathematical class in Moscow, and we were trained under very strong pressure. Like, if we are good, we will get into university, we will get a waiver from the army. So we needed to perform well in math. So I was trained to perform really well in math and physics problems. And I was one of the best, like one of the two best students in the class, and maybe one out of four people, among like 100 people in the school. And the way I did it was to meditate, close the eyes, meditate, get the answer, and then reconstruct from the answer how it was produced. It's a form of telepathic connection, but I think it's connection to the higher self, rather than to anybody else. But and also I write poetry. I wrote a lot of poetry in the past and some music. So that is when also telepathic connection is practiced. I do the line, and then something from outside of me does that. So it's a sort of telepathy, but it is it's I don't know where from is it coming. Mostly from highest, most likely from higher self. I had one experience when I was doing my DNA writing. I wrote like a chap or a wrote a paper on that, and at some point I went to very far out idea, and at that time in my mind a voice sounded which was beautiful, feminine, and beautiful female, and it said, "Ha ha 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 ha! What are you doing? Ha 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 ha!" It was very clear. I was completely awake, but that was my only like very clear telepathic message. I don't know who was doing that, but I clearly was breaking the matrix at that moment.
Well, you know, I've had lots of mo very few moments when I have been able to initiate telepathy, but lots of moments when it has been, well, there's a word or phrase rather, baseball cap, which if I hear that just in my mind 3 times, baseball cap, baseball cap, baseball cap, it's like a signal. And I quiet my mind, and immediately verbal telepathy starts with whoever is wishing to communicate with me. So, and that's been going on for a long time. So I do have that. But when they stop, so do I. I can't communicate with anyone else telepathically. So it's very frustrating. Now, when we're going to get back, we're going to get a little bit deeper into the idea of the collective DNA vibration of the body. And maybe how this enables the type of message targeting I was just talking about. We'll be right back with Max.
I'm back.
We're talking to Max Rempel. His website is xg1.org. He's holding it up again, xg1.org. And what you will find there is number one, an ability to participate. You can register, you can get involved, you can donate. You will find there, and we're going to be talking about this in a little bit more later, of tools for hybrids, where he has a whole list of different things that you places you can go and recommendations for you. So, this whole thing is about not being passive anymore. We're so passive. We sit and we wait and we wait for the next thing, and then we die waiting. Let's not wait, folks. I don't want to wait anymore. I'm done with waiting. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's do
Let's
it.
get Max going with telepathy. He's ready. He knows what he's doing, and he's only had a few moments of it, like me. And I can't turn it on myself, but it can be turned on within me, as I told you. Now let's talk a little bit more about what we were the collective DNA vibration of the body. What do you mean by that?
Right. So, you mean of the body of the humanity? There was a collective of the
Well,
body and collective of the humanity. Let's start with the
you
body.
say, you say the collective DNA vibration of the body allows specific message targeting. That you mentioned in,
Oh, right. Yeah.
you're right. Yeah. Okay. You got it.
So I think one of the key questions in telepathy is, why telepaths are specific? There is billions of us, and only one telepath sends the information to another telepath very specifically. That specificity we can find in also in remote viewing. Somehow on a higher level, there is a connection very specific, and in telepathy you don't hear the some of us do hear, like if you turn on, like remove all the barriers, we hear lots of noise outside. But telepaths, they speak one to one or one to a few with very specific targeting, specificity of targeting. And my hypothesis is that it is the sequence of DNA which makes a perfect identifier, barcode, the vibration of the whole body. And I got some confirmations on that from others.
Now, the receiver receives the message only from the sender if this targeting works. In my case, what has happened occasionally when I'm not being interrogated telepathically, when I'm just usually when I'm quite tired, and suddenly I begin to hear the voices of the people around me. Like, I'll give you an exact description of this. It happened in England a couple of years ago. I was very tired. I'd just come in from the United States and traveled to a little town to put my luggage down in the bed on the floor and lay down back on the bed. And suddenly I could hear people talking. And I thought, oh my God, I can't live here. This is all this talking. I can hear everybody in the. Then I realized they weren't, it was in my head. And I was hearing people thinking about their, cooking or the telly and whatnot, just casual in internal dialoguing. And I thought, boy, this worries me a little bit because if it doesn't go away, what am I going to do? And then it faded eventually. What's happening there when suddenly a person can be a telepathic receiver? I don't think I could have transmitted anything to him. I didn't try, actually. But what is happening in the body?
All right. I had experiences like that, especially when I have very little sleep. The sleep deprivation breaks something in the mind, and there is a flood of voices. And some of these are people I know, and some of these are people I don't even know. And this happens lately. Maybe I have more sleep lately. Less of that happens lately. In the recent episode, I think season two, episode three by Kai Dickens, Telepathy Tapes, they mention an autistic. No, it was the previous episode two, autistic, non-speaking autist who can type. And she's overwhelmed with a number of voices, mostly from the dead people, from the discarnate spirits. And she handles them all right, but when somebody connected, like a normal person, a psychic connected to her, she experienced that and she was overwhelmed. So it's very possible that non-speaking autistic, telepathic non-speaking autists, they have this blockage open, and that's very important for understanding the mechanism how it works. To me, it is a function of DNA and the function of the brain, which brings us to this specific point in time, to this specific body, and focuses the ego on that specific point in time. We are trained very specifically to be here now, watch your step, watch what you are saying, be here now, like we are being trained, and that is a mechanism, I think, in the brain. I don't know yet what it is, but specifically it makes us be here in time and drive forward in time. I think non-speaking telepaths, because everything, because they're autistic, because they don't have to take care of the body, they don't have that cultural pressure to be driving in time, so they can be timeless. They can have premonitions. They can see in the future, and they can connect with others because that separation. So the mechanism, there is one soul that splits in all humans. We are the same soul, split like in a prism into billions of rays, and that splitting happens multiple times. It's like branches, branches, branches. And I think what happens is telepathy travels up the branch of the soul until there is a junction, and then it goes down to another soul. So it is a connection. The body, physical mind, to the soul, to the oversoul, back to the soul, back to the another body. And this is pretty much what I read in also in other people who discuss the mechanism of telepathy. The mechanism is transdimensional. You have to exit the physical world into the astral world. There is a connection, and then you return back to the physical.
There was a Japanese researcher called Mashiru Emoto who wrote a book called The Hidden Messages in Water, and he collaborated with Dean Radin, who incidentally, folks, will be on Dreamland again
Nice.
soon.
Reading a good supporter of mine.
Dean is,
Yeah.
Dean's a very special and important man. I think he's one of the most important people. He's been doing this for so long, and he never stops, and he's always at the cutting edge, and he's always very, very precise in his science. Amazing man. Okay, but
There
anyway,
is a great book, Real Magic. I loved it. It's a pretty
I've
recent.
interviewed Dean on Real Magic, and I'm going to interview him on his new book too, just in a couple of weeks. So anyway, I want to get back to water because the thing is that water is such a Emoto's work says that we can influence water basically with meditation. And I'm thinking that maybe there's some kind of a connection between the water in the in that in the in the cells and some kind of meditation that would enable us to somehow free ourselves. I'm just kind of going down a dark path here. I don't know
No, no,
quite
no.
where I'm.
It's part of my chapter, so it's right on the point.
Okay, well, it's time for you to take over.
All right. So basically, when I discovered that polywater surrounding DNA is imprinting the sequence of DNA in water by shifting the layers, that polywater has a very interesting structure. It's a honeycomb, but it has gaps. It has gaps because otherwise, if you build a perfect honeycomb of polywater, it will be
When are you
charged.
saying, Max, are you saying holy water, HOLY?
Honeycomb. Bee honeycomb. Honeycomb.
Oh, honeycomb. Okay, I
Yeah,
understand.
maybe
All
I
right.
pronounce it bad. Honeycomb. Honey,
Right.
honey, honeycomb. Anyway, so the perfect honeycomb polywater structure would be super highly charged with negative charge. It would shot firebolts. So it's not possible. But if you break some of the connections, it becomes an island of perfect flat crystal, a liquid crystal, but surrounded by individual molecules of water. So that is a very a stable structure, and it is, I think it forms around charged surfaces like DNA. So what is interesting about this structure, it's very dynamic. It is imperfect in nature. If it grows on one side, it gains a charge, so it has to dissolve on the other side. And especially weird or especially uncomfortable is the solution of DNA in that polywater, because DNA has one level of symmetry. It's a crystal with a certain number of steps. It's 20 stump, 21 letter steps per two turns of DNA, or 10 and a half per one turn. So it's one symmetry of the crystal, and the honeycomb is hexagonal symmetry. So this 10 and a half fits in hexagonal very poorly. So it has to constantly jitter back and forth, or maybe even twist fast. So it would, and it is attracted by through hydrophilic bonds, but also it's repelled by, because it cannot perfectly fit. So for that reason, I wrote a couple of chapters. One of them is accepted for publication, meaning that imperfection is the basis of life. And essentially, it plays a role in consciousness. So what you get is a constant dynamic structure which constantly grows and dissolves. There is a fight, competition between order and chaos, order and chaos. And that, I think, is where the spirit energy, astral energy, etherical energy is entering in our world, and it can imprint on it very easily, because very minute forces can organize, especially the morphic field, can organize how the water is structured. So water has this unique property of being a mixture between order and chaos, like the whole life. And that's where the spirit has the right to orchestrate, organize the structure formation. And that relates to Stuart Hameroff and Roger Penrose's idea of orchestrated objective reduction. It's the same idea, that there is orchestration, there is coordination, and that relates to Rupert Sheldrake's morphic field. Again, a field which produces shape in this world. So to get the shape, you need like very unstable, constantly reorganizing system, which is aiming at structure but cannot achieve it. Did I address it?
I
At
think
least the
that's
main idea, there
great.
is
No,
constant competition between order and chaos, and that's imperfection.
I think that what I want to do now, we've reached another break, our last break, and we'll be right back with Max Rempel. We're talking to Max Rempel, his website, xg1.org. That's xg1.org, where you can find out all kinds of things about what he's doing and engage with him in this journey that we are all on to make a new human species.
Yes.
Because we've used this one up, it's time for something new. We need a new car, folks. All right. Now, one of the things that you talk about is I find absolutely fascinating is the idea that to understand telepathy, we need to look not so much at rationality, but at the deeper level, at consciousness itself, and starting with the idea of free will. Can you give us an idea of what you mean by free will and why it's so important a part of this journey?
Yeah. So to define consciousness, we need to understand the free will. And we can play with the idea of free will. What is necessary to actually express that free will? And I define it that the either computer or a human or an animal or any device which has free will has to be under time pressure to actually move forward and should have limited information to make choices. Because if it had all perfect information on unlimited time, then it would always do make a perfect choice. But limitation in time and information makes us make choices intuitively or completely at random. And the example of that is bump and go toy cars. They would move, see the obstacle, bump a little bit, and then turn and make a choice where to go. And that was pretty much a very simplistic model of free will. And this bump and go car didn't have even a computational nothing. It wasn't electronically computation. It was just purely mechanical simulation of free will. But essentially, what happens is, I think, is we are in a collective dream. In a collective dream, it's a illusionary reality, which is collective illusionary reality, and the soul lands in the body, and this body is driven forward in time with limited information. And the main lesson we get here is, we constantly are forced to exercise free will and make choices. So when we make these choices are very frequently are important for survival. Like if you drive a car, it's so easy to make a wrong choice and kill yourself. Or there is tons of choices we are forced to make every day. There is pretty much impossible to live without making choices. And unless somebody makes choices for you. But I think this reality is geared up to give us experience of actually being responsible for ourselves, and second is to maximize the individual and collective drama. So what happens in telepathy, I think, is liberation of that time pressure, liberation of necessity to be responsible for ourselves. So I think the telepath goes between the timeless state where the information is. Basically, they merge. It's like in a Star Trek mind meld. The two minds of two people merge temporarily, and then there is a step back when they separate again. There is again ego is turned on. You become again yourself, and that's where you translate what you remember from the merged state into the fixed state here in time with a specific answer. So that's pretty much consideration. I think there is like good psychics, they partly sleep, and I learned that art to be partly asleep and partly awake at the same time. When you do like a channeling or telepathy or psychic work or scientific breakthrough work, like solve very difficult problems, you have to be at the two places at the same time, here physically and up there, and you become a receiver or a channel, and you do both things. I mean, just being there is not enough. You have to ask the question very, very proactively. You express your will, and then opens yourself up to receive the answer. So
This
that's
is
basically a short version of what I mean under free will.
this body asleep, mind awake state is taught in the Monroe Institute, also Bob Monroe's Institute. Now, there is a possibility that you point out in your video of DNA making a single coherent integrated system between a higher mind and the physical mind. And that, I think, is critically important because the physical mind, the mind you and I are in right now, is being dragged, as you put it, through time. And we always have to, we couldn't make choices if we weren't like that. Now, the little people, the little gray people, I have been with many times in my life, do not have this. They are not in time drag. They're not in the time stream. And they don't have the kinds of choices we do. And it's a very odd experience to really be with them because you're kind of at, you don't know what's going to happen next, but they do. And it's really weird, but at the same time, they're not without agency. They have a lot of agency in the world. Now, you say the time drag is created by asymmetrical biological processes such as cellular respiration, that is to say, the burning of food inside our cells. This slow fire creates an asymmetry in time, and thus the experience of time drag. In other words, because of the asymmetry, we're drawn in time. Is there any way to step outside of that, Max, that you know of?
Meditation experiences, Monroe ideas with Monroe method with binaural beats and binaural flashes in the eyes. I actually have this mind machine. It's pretty inexpensive mind machine. I use Prasyan mind machine. It's very nice. And when I used it, by the way, first time I used it, I was able to do the exercise of predicting the future. It's just an exercise, computational. First time I did like good hit with that. And psychedelics basically take you out of this time flow, time stream. I think what happens is the culture fragments our crystals in water and crystals in DNA solution. So we get incoherent, discoherent, non-coherent structures in the cells and in the brain. It's like when we did basically part of healing the person, and by the way, the part of healing the person is to unblock blockages in the brain. And what this Prasyan mind machine did really nicely to me when I realized what it is doing. And same as Reiki healing is healing with the hands, is it unfreezes traumas. So you put on this binaural beats headphones, you put the flashes, special glasses which flash gentle flashes, asymmetric flashes in the eyes. And it scans your brain, and when it comes to the memory which was frozen and blocked, you feel the pain, physical pain in certain brain areas or brain memories areas, memory areas. And then you decide that you can let this memory to unfreeze and actually release it. So I think what happens is trauma, especially educational upbringing, like school traumas, like childhood traumas, they all make us fragmented, and the brain is not capable of simple coherent vibration. It's multiple vibration conflicting to each other, multiple vibrations. And then restoring coherence, basically harmony in the brain and in the body, I think is the key to telepathy. If you're kind, if you forgive everybody, if you don't remember the past traumas, if you kind of get over past traumas and you're just fine with everything, then you become some sort of a relaxed hippie, and you actually can dream and telepathically connect. That's the kindness is one of the tools for actually becoming harmonious.
Okay, let's talk now about telepathic oscillation. This process of oscillating between certainty and uncertainty. The difficulty with the Western, with people in our culture, is that we have a lot of trouble with uncertainty. This is a culture of certainties. And but to relax into the world of uncertainty that you have been just talking about, then send a message. You say the person, how would you go about sending someone a telepathic message? How should we go
Okay,
about it?
I had one good experience. We practiced with my close associates telepathy, and my approach, I mean, my experience was limited, but my approach was meditate and actually enter into their body. Like in my dream, I enter, like in my meditation, I enter in their body, focus in their heart, and my heart becomes their heart. Basically, I am inside the body. And that actually worked.
It worked.
Yep.
Well, I think we all need it to work on a regular basis because we need to become telepathic folks. And we're coming to the end of the first hour. Max's website is xg1.org. You can engage with him and participate there. You can read his publications. There's a wonderful section called Tools for Hybrids that you must look at because a lot of you are certainly in this particular space. Thank you, all of you who are not in the subscriber area, for being with us on Dreamland. And as always, I hope to welcome you as participants in our community soon. Let's go on now with Max Rempell and talk about alien hybridization. Now, this is a huge issue in my life, Max,
Yes.
because I have met hybrids who were not, there was no question about what they were. Their condition was they lived rough. They didn't have any source of income or anything. They were profoundly autistic to the point that they couldn't even look at you without great pain. They were unvoiced. They were mute. They could only make grunting noises or little cries. They couldn't make even a peep like a bird, much less a word. They were fluently telepathic, so that when you were with them, you were immediately plunged into a telepathic world. And they had and do have a tremendous amount of difficulty being around me because I'm sort of half in their world and half not. Now, this is a special group. I have a book out called The Fourth Mind, which probably most of my listeners have read. In the subscriber area, anyway, that goes into who I think these people are. But let's look more at a more broad spectrum here. And that is the hybridization and changing of the human genome on a much more general basis. Now, you talk about genetic insertions in families. Can you tell us about that and what that means?
All right, so my alternative history started early. I was obsessed with science fiction. When I was 16, like around 1980, I was walking on the street. I was writing poetry. I looked at the sky. I looked at the stars. I liked the Pleiades. And I decided consciously my storyline will be that I'm from Pleiades. And I will show the humanity how everything is mysteriously connected. Everything is connected in time and space. There are mysterious synchronistic connections everywhere. And Skipping forward in 2009, I read a book by Lynn McTaggart called The Field about quantum properties of the biology in biology of us. And next step, it was February 8, 2009, I decided let's check out the aliens. Immediately, I recognized the grays on the pictures. I dived into YouTube and the books. I found a UFO interest group with Richard Dolan and Cookie Stringfellow, and I visited in the next like next Wednesday. I visited it in Barnes and Noble bookstore, and there was an exceptional abductee speaking there. And I took extensive interviews with her. They're all published on YouTube. And she had a memory, conscious memory of visitations, and she was like a conscious abductee because she agreed to the abductions rehabilitation program, conscious contactee, and had lots of memories because they promised her to keep the memories. So lots of information came my way. And my main problem was to combine the hybridization idea with the idea of the evolution, and I published my book, Celestial Science 2012, which talks about the biology of extraterrestrials. And I started the abduction support group, contact experiences support group. So I had lots of first person accounts of that, of the abductees. And I started studying channeling. I found my channelers who helped me understand the situation. And finally, in 2013, I got my own channeler who channeled for me every week, at least once or twice a week. We all published everything we did. And we started a community essentially for voluntary abductions. People wanted to be taken, and people wanted to make hybrid children out there. And hundreds of people kind of went through our community. It's called Human Colony, abbreviated hucola.org. So there is a channel for Hucola TV, and you can see there are hundreds of hours of videos of the main channel and other channelers. So we started teaching channeling. So I had in the same, we were the first ones to get multiple channelers to come with open microphone, broadcast it on YouTube. I could ask the same questions to independent channelers to verify the findings. So lots of information. And after that, I wrote a book called Welcome to Earth, A Guide for Aliens. Welcome to Earth, A Guide for Aliens. And this is the only book which is written by Earth human for the aliens, because they didn't understand what we understand. And I was told by them that in the channeling sessions that it is a required reading for people who work on this planet. So it's pretty popular there up there. So the abduction experiences, as you will know, and the listeners know, is they take both parents simultaneously or separately, take their reproductive cells, sperm and eggs, fertilize the eggs, modify the genetics, mix the parental DNA with their own DNA, some of their own DNA, the aliens, and then impregnate the mother again. So mother has to be taken twice, I guess. And then the mother gives a birth to a hybrid child down here. So the child is a child of the parents, but has grandparents or some mixed in the genetics from the aliens. And also the hybrids are they are also extraterrestrial. They're also extraterrestrial hybrids. And as David Jacobs says, there is like hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands hybrids which have grown in alien culture, being implanted down here, and they live here among us. But they have they are basically implants, plants from the alien cultures. And it's not only from the grays, from many other civilization, including Lyra, reptilians, Pleiadians, Yael, which is a hybrid race, Arcturians, Sirians, and so on. So the idea was when in summer 2024, over a year ago, Ross Coulthard announced that there is a funding for research to prove extraterrestrials visiting the planet. Obvious idea was, how about my idea? How about we take the hybrid families with the memories of abductions and see if if we can observe, analyze the DNA, and we observe the insertions. If we take a trio, father, mother, and a child, the child should have the sequences of the parents, but also should have some unusual variations which are not in the parents. So I proposed that to Ross Coulthard and the funding agency which he sent me. So far, I didn't hear the answer from them. So my application, I didn't get any answers. But I went ahead and analyzed public data. There is a public database called Thousand Genomes Project, Thousand Genomes Project. And I checked the trios computationally. These are human genotypes. I looked at human genotypes, but I checked if there is any problem with them. So I picked only the ones where the children are clear children from their parents. So there is a trio. There is 50% of mother, 50% of father. Usually it's one chromosome. There are parallel chromosome called homologous chromosome. There is only like chromosome one, father chromosome, and mother. They're always in parallel. And so I found over 500 families which had proper inheritance. A child is clearly a child of these two parents. And looked for insertion substitutions and replacements. And I found 11 families out of over 500 which had very weird substitutions. It wasn't only one chromosome, but on both chromosomes were substitutions. Same substitution was on on both chromosomes. And the biggest one was pretty big, 16 kilobases, and over 100 markers, 100 variants were replaced, absent in the parents. So I immediately self-published. I just uploaded the report to the ResearchGate. You just can upload any report. It's not reviewed by anyone. Later,
You're going. Wait, Max.
go ahead.
Let's roll back here just a second. You found a number of families in which the
11 families, yeah.
children had genetic markers in them that weren't from the parents.
Yeah. But
Oh, can you tell us what?
later I looked more closely at this data set, and unfortunately, it is possible that these are technical artifacts. It looked too good, so at the time of the report, I didn't know about technical artifacts, but one artifact, the quality of the sequencing is old, it's like 20-year-old project, so the sequencing quality wasn't very good. And the second thing, they use cultured cell. They took blood from, like, normal humans, took blood from normal humans, took white cells from the blood, cultured them in flasks. And when they do culturing, possibly artifacts could happen. So I don't know. It could be either alien insertions or it could be culturing or sequencing artifacts. We need to do more data sets, more modern ones. Now the precision is super high. You get right away in 1 or 2 days, you get full sequence of the whole genome. It's no guessing, no culturing. You can do it from a cheek swab. Inside the cheek, you swab the cell. You don't even need blood. It can be taken at home and analyzed right away.
So you say, though, that the insertions weren't single markers, but they
No,
were.
it was over 100 markers replaced in both parents and both chromosomes. Yeah.
Can you tell what effect they would have had on the children, these extra
I
genes?
didn't look at that. No. I don't know.
Is it possible to tell that conceivably?
I think our science is so far behind. So I don't expect a lot of changes in protein coding genes. I expect it to be between the genes. My DNA resonance science says that most important thing which is related to telepathy is between the genes in so-called junk DNA, non-coding DNA. So unfortunately, the science currently doesn't know much about non-coding DNA. I expect that repetitive sequences, which are called ALUs, would be affected. And most probably they would repair the noise of errors in ALUs to make our genome more coherent, more uniform. So that's my main hypothesis. But possibly it relates to brain structure. I mean, if not that, if you just look at what biology knows, brain structure and neurological genes, neuronal genes, genes related for to development, something like that, genes related to autism. There are screens of genes for autistic genes. My guess, autists are alien hybrids. So maybe we just find that this substitution could be in the place where autism is located. It's I didn't check that. That's a great idea. We could check that.
So, were you able to be in contact with any of these families?
Right. So, the same publication, self-publication, non-reviewed by anyone. I already had two families looked at, who had self-reported abduction experiences or some sort of anomalies of that sort. And there were a number of markers which were non-parental, around 30, 40 variants out of under 1,700,000. So 30, 40. It could be a noise, could be not. But what is interesting in one of the families, it is nine markers at the same place on the chromosome, very close to each other, which is making it less likely that it is noise. It could be a real thing. So we need to do lots more of that. And my publication was sitting silently for almost half a year, and then October 6th, it was picked up by Daily Mail. I was contacted by a reporter. I didn't believe it was real. I didn't pay attention, but I answered the questions by email. And they published a very good article, no errors there. It's all very good. And then it was picked up by other resources, so maybe another 15 online news outlets picked it up. I was interviewed a few times. And then I received about 17 letters from abductees. So now I have access to abductees. And most importantly, I was contacted and now I'm partnering with United Experiencers Initiative, Natalie Hill, who knows everybody in abduction research. And so we have access to abductees. Now we need funding to analyze them. So I'm gearing up. So I got the third family analyzed. We get more anomalies, more non-parental anomalies. All three families, they don't overlap. There is no similar anomalies. They're all in different places. But in the same family, there are overlaps between two children. So that is also interesting. So now we are collecting more samples. It's all done. We don't have a lab. It's all can be done by mail. The cheapest analysis is $50 per person. So for a family of three people, two adults, one adult child, it would be $150. And right now we just suggest to abductees to fund themselves that analysis. And
So
you.
abductees can get genetic analysis from you.
Yeah, there are 23andMe, but I prefer MyHeritage. It's cheaper and it's easier for me to get access to the data after they submit it. So the process is very simple. You contact me, you get instructions on the site, and you order the kits on Amazon, get the kit, brush your cheek, take a picture of the code of ID, send the picture to me. Put it in a standard box, mail it back to MyHeritage. After a while, they do the analysis. It's only human markers, almost a million markers, 700,000 markers.
Yeah,
And then,
folks, you can go to xg1.org and click on participate, and you'll get all of these instructions.
and I will download your data and will tell you what I find, and I will anonymize the results and publish the reports as we get more. More expensive, tenfold more expensive. It would be $500 per person. We can get 70% of the genome sequence, so it would be not only human markers, but the complete sequence of 70% of the genome. And for $2,000 per person, we can get 99.5% of the genome sequenced. And that would be the ultimate readout. There we will see everything, including repetitive elements, all the sequences. So one family is geared up to do the sequencing, and I hope that more families will do that. And also, folks, if anybody can give us interviews, video interviews, I think that would be great. If a family, one person with a trio, can give an interview, that would attract funders. So maybe some people would donate money specifically to sequence that family. If the story is compelling, then it would be more interesting for the donors to donate for sequencing of that family. That would be super cool. So we collect donations. We do it through the my DNA Resonance companies. It's a non-profit registered, so you can get a tax cut.
DNAresonance.org. You've got
Yep.
a lot of websites.
Yeah, I have several. But that's an older one. There you can read about DNA resonance. And basically, I just saying that you pay, donate through a non-profit, and you get a tax cut from that. So that's super
Well,
cool. So
great.
we invite donations, and I also invite partners. It's not my property. Anybody can do that. The analysis is so simple. I do it using AI called Claude 4.5, a paid version. Basically, I have it program the thing, and I'm very good in making sure the program is good. And then I run it myself. So once the program is programmed, I run it on Python on my laptop. Or if I need a server, I have a server. So I'm super experienced with that. And anybody can do the same. I can share with you, like I can do a tutorial how to analyze. If you're afraid to give me your DNA, you can run it yourself. The analysis itself runs for maybe 10 minutes. It's not super complex, like this short one, the cheap one. It's only under a million marker variants. It's pretty easy.
Max, thank you so much for being with us. Your gateway into Max's world is xg1.org. Go there and click on participate if you would like to get involved in DNA analysis of you and your own family. We are making progress, folks, and there's many tools here for those who are interested in telepathy and other forms of gaining access and agency in the new consciousness that is developing here among human beings on planet Earth, led by pioneers like Max and so many like him, and so many of them have interviewed on Dreamland. Max, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Whitler. Thank you, the audience. And I'm open. All contacts are there. Feel free to contact me, email, WhatsApp messaging, and Telegram and Signal messaging. I'm available.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of unknowncountry.com is Anne Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.